Good evening and welcome to Local Motion. I'm Allie Lightfoot. Thanks to ebook self-publishing, every writer in the world has access to tools and knowledge of professional publishing. Self-published books accounted for 31% of all ebook sales in the Kindle store in 2014. Tonight on the show, we'll hear from three local authors who have self-published books, all of them about the natural world around us. First, we'll hear an interview with Joseph Caldwell, who wrote the book Canyon Breezes, Exploring Magical Places in Nature. Then we'll hear from Steve Lyons, who wrote The Black Canyon of the Gunnison Explorer's Guide. And finally, we'll hear from Laura Lee Yates about her new historical novel, Bound for the Western Sea, the canine account of the Lewis and Clark Expedition. Stay tuned. Hotchkiss resident Joseph Caldwell was an in-the-field U.S. forest manager for more than 27 years. He and his wife now live on and manage a 40-acre nature preserve overlooking the North Fork Valley. Caldwell released Canyon Breezes in 2015. The book is a collection of essays, poems, and stories about his life and adventures outside.
My office was outdoors. My office was at 200 or 300,000 acres of national forest. And even though I had to spend a lot of time in the office, I tried to get out on horseback, on foot, or whatever it was. So I was lucky that I was able to explore all the way from the California coast to the Slick Rock Canyons of Utah and the Black Hills, as well as Colorado. And even on weekends, it's sort of like the busman's holiday. I would spend time during the week doing my work out in the forest, but then during the weekend, I'd have to take my wife out and shore all those great places I found. So I spent a lot of time, a lot of it by myself. And I'm sort of a loner type of person anyway, but I'm also curious. And when I'm out hiking or writing or whatever I was doing, I'm not just looking at the birds and the mountains and all that. I'm kind of thinking about what's it all mean. I tend to be sort of philosophical. So that's where all this came from. And I would write. And for years and years, I would write and just stick it in the shelf, figuring, yeah, okay, that's nice. And I never thought about publishing. But as you get older, sometimes your perspective changes. And I thought, you know, maybe it's about time. And I didn't want to play the game of going through publishing with the big time publishing houses. I know what that's all like. It's just, you know, you send it out and you get rejected and back and forth a few dozen times. And it's like, I didn't want to deal with that. And so I decided to self-publish. And that was quite an experience. And it was a very pleasant experience for me. And so what you see, the book Canyon Breezes, is what came out of a selection of just several different essays and poems.
Let's talk a little bit about this area in particular and some of the great places that you visited and wrote about in Canyon Breezes here in Western Colorado and in Utah, too.
Yeah. Some of them are as simple as just looking at my back door, sitting on my property down by the creek, watching the cattails, all the fluff from the cattails in about a November day as the wind wafts the seeds. Some of them take place up on top of Grand Mesa, driving down from Grand Mesa, watching a flock of ravens fly by. Some of it is just very simple type of things. Others, Arches National Park.
Can you tell us about the raven story? I'd love to hear that one.
One day, and actually it was the winter solstice, December 21st, and my wife and I had driven up to Grand Mesa, and on the way back down, about halfway down above Cedar Ridge, we noticed a flock of ravens flying towards us, and it's like they were coming out of the Black Canyon. They were flying all the way across the valley. And it just seemed like they streamed for miles. And you couldn't even count them. It's like trying to count a bunch of mosquitoes. And so we pulled the truck off the edge of the road and we watched. And they kept coming and coming. And I looked behind me and they were landing on a hill right behind me. And they covered it just like a mass of velvet. But there were literally thousands of ravens. And I thought, it was like, gee, being the shortest day of the year, were they looking for something like more sunlight? And that's why they had all gathered together and were flying to the top of Grand Mesa. And to me, it was just so mind-boggling that they had all come in formation and they stretched for miles. And so I write a little bit about that, what was in their mind, and especially the timing of it being the winter solstice.
Beautiful. And then you also write about the sandhill cranes, which most of us that live out here are familiar with.
Yes, and where we live, it's only maybe 10 or 15 air miles from Fruit Growers Reservoir, and usually in the spring. And the cranes are about as dependable as the hummingbirds. And where we live, the cranes, it's usually about March 21st, which is the spring equinox. And the hummingbirds are April 21st. So you can almost set your calendar by the different types of migratory birds. But we know the cranes are coming because they will fly over way high above and we can hear them honking. And you can look up and you can see them flying in formation, who knows how many thousands of feet up in the air. And one fascinating thing that I write about is that as they're flying and they're flapping their wings slowly, the way the sun catches the white of the wings as they go up and down, it's like a strobe light up there. And you look up there and you see this flashing white. To me, here again is another almost spiritual experience, because as thousands of them come in and they're circling around and they're at different levels and some of them are already in the ground, and I call it a chorus of angels or assembly of angels, but it's like, what do angels sound like? And this is, to me, what they sound like is the honking of the cranes. And, you know, it's just a stopover for one or two nights on their trip up to their breeding grounds. But they do it every year, and they've been doing it for thousands of years. And I think about the species that used to do that aren't here anymore, like the passenger pigeons, which we've taken them to extinction. The bison on the Great Plains, where there were this, they covered from horizon to horizon. And this was something that most people don't ever get to see anymore. And someone that doesn't get to see the sandhill cranes, to me, is missing out on something so special and so unbelievable. So those are the types of things. And that's why I say get kind of personal and kind of emotional on some of these things. But it's something out there that everybody can see if they take the time.
And we're so lucky in this area. We're surrounded by nature in all directions, really. Many of the stories and poems included in this book are places that you, the listener, may be familiar with. Very local, magnificent places that we can all visit. What is one area out here where you would say to anyone who is passing through, you must see this, you must go to this place?
Well, obviously, the one place here is the Black Canyon of the Gunnison. And I love the North Rim, sort of like the North Rim of the Grand Canyon. There's fewer people. And to me, actually, I'm scared sometimes to go over there, because if I get up near the rim, I always have this feeling is, oh my gosh, what if I flip out and jump off and try and fly? And I mentioned that to other people and they kind of laugh, but some of them say, you know, I have the same feeling. And I'm not afraid of heights. I love to climb up the top of mountains and look down. But the Black Canyon is just so unbelievable, and it's just straight down for so many hundreds and thousands of feet. I would say you have to see that. And other places would be simple things like Grand Mesa or some of the high country, especially like Engineer Pass, go up to Silverton and Lake City, see the alpine country that is just amazing. You have the canyons that seem to go on forever. And Grand Mesa, you can get hiking around and kind of get lost with all the meadows and the lakes. But a lot of places, and what I say here, you can even find your own magical place in a city park in your backyard. You have to have that state of mind where you pay attention to what you have out there. And it doesn't have to be the spectacular places. It can be just any place where nature is allowed to kind of do its thing. It could even be down along the North Fork of the Gunnison, go down to Pleasure Park along the river or along the river here, and just take in the sounds and the scenes without having your cell phone or even without talking to someone. And I think most people are afraid to be by themselves. And kind of that's one message I'm saying is go out and be by yourself. That way you're going to be able to experience some things that you're never going to experience if you just always have that cell phone in your ear or you're always talking to somebody. The quiet is something valuable.
Local author and naturalist Joseph Caldwell on his self-published book, Canyon Breezes, Exploring Magical Places in Nature. We're exploring the natural world on Local Motion this evening with some self-published authors. And now an interview with Steve Lyons. Steve wrote The Black Canyon of the Gunnison Explorer's Guide. He wrote it back in 2001. It gives you a complete guide to everything you might want to see or do in the Black Canyon of the Gunnison National Park, Currikanti National Recreation Area and the Gunnison Gorge Wilderness Area. It also gives you the history of this area, both the geological history and the political, along with stories about early explorers. Whether it's fishing, camping, hiking, boating, or just stories you're after, this book has it all. Here's that interview. What inspired you to write this book?
My wife and I moved out from Massachusetts to the area, and I found out that the Black Canyon was in our backyard, basically. I'm a writer, and I had been doing work for a local newspaper, and I was looking for other writing opportunities and exploring opportunities. Actually, the exploring comes first, and the writing is an excuse to get out there and just be in the beauty and explore, find out what really is there in the Black Canyon.
Did you actually explore all the different areas that you talk about in this book?
Yeah, actually I did. I did a lot of research into the established trails in the park and the Gunnison Gorge in Currikanti. And so I started there exploring those trails. And then I went out and I explored on my own other trails, and I pioneered some trails that are in the book that that were doable and I could really recommend to people. There were a number of trails that, well, they weren't actually trails. A lot of times what I would do is I would look on a map and I'd see where side canyons were coming into the Black Canyon. And so I'd go there and then I'd hike it and see if it was passable to get all the way down. And oftentimes they weren't. They would cliff out, or they'd be just impassable in terms of the brush and the thickets and that kind of thing. But some of them were passable and quite an adventure, a bushwhacking adventure to actually come from the rim and make it all the way down to the river.
Did you have any moments where you found yourself in a precarious situation? Where you're like, I'm going to have to get airlifted out of here or anything?
Right. Actually, I did. I had, I'd say, several. Two of them involved bear encounters. And the bear encounters, it's because you're in a canyon, and it's narrow, and it's really V-shaped, these side canyons. So there's not much space at the bottom of that V to maneuver. And twice I ran into bears, and the bears were very surprised because nobody goes down there. And one of those encounters, I was in the bottom of this V walking along. There was basically a trickle down at the bottom. A water course that was going down to the river. And I heard grunting, and I looked over, and I saw, I heard the brush moving, and I saw this cub climbing up a tree about, I'd say maybe 15 feet away. Then it was followed by another cub, and then a third cub. They were going up the tree, and then I could hear the mother bear hoofing just on the other side of the tree. And that, because it was such a surprise and the quarters were so close that, I had the experience. It was like a dream because it was very thick oak brush and I could move just very slowly through the oak brush to get away. Fortunately for me, the mother was concerned about her cubs. She was on the other side. She was woofing to the cubs, and I was able to make it up the other side and get to a place where I could see clearly. And the mother was on the other side of the water course, walking back and forth, woofing. And she looked at me, but I could tell she wasn't going to come after me. But it was. When you're that close, it was a big bear, and when they have cubs, it was a surprise, a good adrenaline rush.
Yeah. One thing that I enjoyed reading about in the book was all the different animals. I mean, there are like five different kinds of bats that you'll find. And so can you tell me a little bit more about that and the just sort of the unique nature of the wildlife that's down there?
Sure, sure. And one of the things that surprised me is the peregrine falcons nest on the walls in the canyon. And they're very beautiful to watch, and they dive. They're extremely fast diver. And there's also an animal called ring-tailed cat. And I've only ever seen one of these, but they do live in the Black Canyon. And I know at the time that I was researching the book, the rangers, I think it was the rangers, they were monitoring the falcon nesting sites. And they noticed that the eggs were disappearing from some of the nests. They didn't know why, but one of the explanations that somebody put forward was that the ring-tailed cats are extremely agile climbers and can actually climb the cliff face and get to the nests.
So what's your favorite part of the canyon or the surrounding wilderness areas for something that might be a day trip and then for something that might take 2 or 3 days to explore?
Uh-huh. There's the Warner Trail, and that's on the south rim. That trail, it goes down to the river, and it's 4.5 miles down to the river on the trail. And then there are, there's 4 or 5 campsites along the river, and you can walk along. You have access along the river for about 2 miles, depending on the water level. It's incredible fishing down there, and it's very, very beautiful. There's some ponderosa pines down there that are majestic. They're really, really big trees. That's an overnight. On the North Rim, SOB Trail is one that it's about, an elevation drop of 1,800 feet or so, and there's also 1 or 2 campsites down the SOB, some very dramatic the rapids and pour overs, huge boulders, the water pouring over, a nice gravel bar campsite. Last time I was down there, that could have changed, depending on the water level. So those are two that you could really do overnight, so a couple of nights. The Warner and the SOB, you're going down. It's very steep. If you're carrying a pack, you really need to be in shape and know what you're doing for those two. I guess my favorite hike there, and this would be a day hike, and that's Kiraconte Creek. The Kiraconte Creek Trail is off Highway 92 between Crawford and Blue Mesa Lake, a reservoir, and it's one I recommend because it's such a beautiful trail, and the way the trail is laid out. If you go to Pioneer Point, which is on the south side, you'll see it on the south side of 92, come into the parking lot, and you can pick up the Kiraconte Trail. It's 4 miles round trip, so it's 2 miles down, 2 miles back. You're dropping about 880 feet. And the trail, it has some nice switchbacks, and it's forested, and it runs along at different points. It comes back to the creek, and the creek has a number of cascades. So when the water's flowing, particularly in the spring and the fall, it's so beautiful because you have these big boulders and rocks, and the water coursing over the rocks and very pleasant. You have shade if it's sunny, and you go all the way down to the reservoir, and there's a picnic table down there. It's just a great day hike. Highly recommend it.
For people who care about this park, what organizations might they be involved with to protect it and preserve it?
Audubon is very good. There's National Parks Association is very good. Getting out there and visiting the park it seems like a really simple thing, but the more people that are out there and see what we have, the more, you know, we'll all find ways to protect and influence our legislators and the people who represent us, you know, to protecting the treasures that we have, which are under threat. You know, they're under threat by groups that want to exploit the natural resources for monetary gain and industry. That threat seems to be growing. And it's not just, you know, our Black Canyon and Gunnison Gorge and Chiricahua. It's the whole system of national parks and, you know, other public lands mm-hmm. that are being threatened.
And again, I've been speaking with Steve Lyons, who came out with a guidebook back in 2001 called Black Canyon of the Gunnison Explorers. All right. Thank
Great.
You.
Thanks, Allie.
You're tuned into Local Motion on KVNF. Tonight, we're hearing from some local authors who have self-published books. Paonia librarian Laura Lee Yates celebrates the release of her debut historical novel, Bound for the Western Sea, the canine account of the Lewis and Clark expedition. Laura Lee draws on her love for history, her sense of humor, and her affection for animals in this romping version of the Lewis and Clark expedition, told through the eyes of Lewis's trusty dog. Here's that interview. Writing a novel is a pretty big, you know, project to take on. How did this all get started?
Well, I went to my first national rendezvous. So those are big mountain man gatherings. Everybody has to dress up in pre-1843 clothes. The Lewis and Clark bicentennial was coming up starting sort of in 2003. So there was a lot of emphasis on the whole Lewis and Clark experience. And we were traveling back, and I started thinking about how all this country must have looked to the dog that traveled with Lewis and Clark. Next to me, I had my Bernese Mountain Dog, Flurry. So another big black furry dog, and it made me think about his perspective.
You were in a very small space with a big dog, it sounds like. How did your dog influence this story?
Oh my gosh, Flurry was an amazing animal. In those days, there weren't as many people doing therapy dog work. But one of the things, as I started researching the book, and there was a lot of research involved, I came to believe that the dog, which was a maybe 150-pound Newfoundland, I began to believe that he was Meriwether Lewis's therapy dog. So Meriwether Lewis, there are different theories. I believe that he was bipolar, so manic depressive. And he, as long as he had something ahead of him, like the journey, he did all right. But when he was resting, in his resting time, things were more difficult. So I feel like the dog made a huge difference in his life, and my dogs have made all the difference in my life. So the dedications are mostly to dogs.
Mm. What is it about dogs that make that difference? What do they do?
I'd say the most important thing they do is accept us exactly as we are, faults and all. They don't really try to change us, except they do try to get us to give them more food or take them for more walks. Dog I have now is half Bernese Mountain Dog, half Golden Retriever. And her goal in life is to be in the moment. She is so full of joy. And I feel like that's how she's helped me look at life in a little more immediate way, just to try to always see the good in things.
What was the value in being able to tell this story to you?
This particular story, I guess part of it is a chance to give back to all the animals that have helped me. One of the things I'd really like to do with this book would be to do some fundraisers for animal rescue, that kind of thing. I feel like we do underestimate the importance of the other creatures that inhabit this planet with us. And dogs can give us so much pleasure and teach us so much about ourselves. All my dogs teach me something. You know, one I had was a pretty wild fellow, and, you know, he helped me to look at the world in a little bit wilder of a way. I have obsessive compulsive disorder, so thinking of dogs as therapy is really important. Dogs obsess about food, and they might obsess about getting out and going for a walk, but otherwise they just don't spend a lot of time worrying.
If you could read an excerpt of your book, that would be great.
Well, I'm just going to read the very beginning, chapter one. I'm just going to read the first paragraph. You get an idea. On the winter night in 1802, when I was born, my grandmother, who was a wise old bitch, reported that a fiery star flew across the Newfoundland sky and vanished into the west. With a snort and a shake of her graying muzzle, she predicted for me the life of a rover. But my travel surpassed her wildest dreams, for my journey with the Corps of Discovery was the grandest any canine has ever known.
It's interesting, too, when you think about how dogs are left out of history in a way when they may have played an important role. Maybe the expedition of Lewis and Clark wouldn't have been able to happen without the support of a dog in a way.
Well, I think Lewis wouldn't have been nearly as successful as a leader. But there are more concrete examples where the dog actually saved members of the Corps. I mean, one time he got in the way of a grizzly that was just about ready to get Meriwether and one of the other expedition members and slowed him down enough that they were able to get another shot and kill the bear. That was the first encounter with the grizzly bear. And then another time there was a bull buffalo that was in the middle of the night was going to storm into the camp and crush people, and the dog turned him back. You know, and he also warned them when there was, intruders, I guess I would say.
You work at a library, so you're surrounded by stories, really. What is the importance of story in this community and for people, really?
Well, I'll give you a perfect example. I had a patron call who's a friend, and she's going through some really hard times right now. She's trying to kind of reinvent herself and change some of her behaviors. And what she wanted were books that, and we're not talking about self-help books. We were talking about stories. She wanted novels that would help her take out her outside of herself. So I think it's a chance for people to explore the world. Yeah, some of us don't have a lot of money. So we have this chance to read books about people and places that we'll probably never get to experience. So I think it can make all the difference in the world.
That was Paeonia librarian and self-published author Loralee Yates talking about her debut historical novel, Bound for the Western Sea, the canine account of the Lewis and Clark expedition. Thank you for tuning into Local Motion. I'm Allie Lightfoot. Stay tuned for As the Worm Turns, coming up next.